It has been nearly 2 weeks since I've written, mostly because I've been too busy pulling my hair out. Dear Diary, I am here to report that foundation paper piecing is not remotely like riding a bike. I had to watch my Carol Doak DVD 3 times, and I still kept making mistakes. Am I really sure this is the right path for my show quilt? The answer to that is no. I am not sure at all. Other reasons for not writing much? Well, there's the tiny matter of our deck, the one that fell off the house. That has also kept me from you, dear Diary. Where to start? How about Sunday dinner at Sam and Jessica's? It was a last-minute invitation via text, and when I asked what the occasion was, Jessica texted back, "Just haven't seen you in a while." Let's see. We babysat for the boys Tuesday night so Sam and Jessica could go to the movies, and then we picked up the boys from preschool on Thursday because Jessica was running late. I'm pretty sure that 72 hours doesn't constitute a while. "Do you think it's some sort of SOS?" I asked Daryl as we walked down the driveway to the house. "Maybe they're being held hostage by..." "Oh, I don't know. I can't think of a funny hostage-taking situation. Can you?" "Maybe they're being held hostage by Jessica's mother," Daryl suggested. "Still not funny," I told him as I tapped on the door. "Can you imagine?" As it turned out, I didn't have to imagine. 2 seconds later, Abby was standing in front of us, dressed in a white jumpsuit and gold platform sandals, her hair a fabulous shade of red I'd never seen on her before. Her entire being seemed suffused with Shalimar. Come in," she said, ushering us inside and leading us to the living room. "Jessica only just this minute told me that you two were coming for dinner. I suppose you invited yourselves. Marnie, have you stopped cooking now that Daryl's retired?" "Why would I do that?" I asked, deciding to ignore the crack about inviting ourselves over. "Oh, you know how some women are once their husbands retire. If you want dinner, then go ahead and make it yourself." I don't know anyone like that," I told her, "although I have friends whose husbands have taken over the cooking now that they're no longer working." "No, you don't," Abby replied, but didn't bother elaborating. "Ah, Abby, such a charmer. Of course, when you look like she does, you don't have to be charming. People, men mostly, have been letting her get away with her crap her entire life." "Marnie, Daryl, you're here." Jessica came out of the kitchen, her cheeks flushed. "So, guess who popped in for a surprise visit this morning?" Abby turned to me and Daryl, shaking her head in mock frustration. "Trying to get this one on the phone is impossible. She's always working, always doing something with the children. I had to take matters into my own hands. We have a baby shower to plan, after all. I got on a plane first thing this morning and texted from the airport. Fortunately, Sam and Jess didn't have anything going on." "Well, we did have tickets to see the Wiggles in Columbus," Jessica pointed out. Abby laughed. "You're welcome. Can you imagine spending all afternoon at a children's concert?" Just then, Sam came into the room, a toddler on each hip. "I'm pretty sure Tyler and Taylor would have loved it. But hey, they love seeing their Abby, too." That's what the boys call her, as though Abby were one of those cute grandmother nicknames like Mimi or Mimsy. Abby can't bear the thought of them calling her anything that suggests she's old enough to be a grandmother. "Take them to see Michael Bublé," she told him. "So much better than those wriggles." "Wiggles," Sam corrected her, clearly attempting to keep his tone light. "Anyway, we appreciate you reimbursing us for the tickets." Abby waved his thanks away. "Don't worry, I'll just deduct it from your Christmas check." I wasn't sure how I was going to survive an entire dinner with Abby. The problem was, it would take wine, and lots of it. But if I drank as much wine as I needed to get through the meal, I might say something snarky that I'd regret later. I didn't mind offending Abby, but I didn't want to make Jessica's life more difficult. Fortunately, I was saved by the bell. Or, more precisely, I was saved by a text from our next-door neighbor, Al Garner. "Heard a loud noise in your backyard," he wrote. "Went to check and noticed that your deck had come down. Good thing no one was sitting up there. At least I hope no one was out there." "You weren't sitting up there, were you? Should I call an ambulance?" "We're over at Sam's," I texted back before I turned to Daryl. "Our deck fell off the house," I reported to him. Daryl didn't ask for details. "We better go check that out," he said. "Yes, we better," I replied. "I'll come with you," Sam said. "I'll follow behind you with the boys." "I'll pack up dinner and bring it over," Jessica piped in. She turned to Abby. "Can you stay here in case we need anything?" Abby looked confused.
I suppose so. I could come with you."
"You don't want to miss 60 minutes," Jessica told her. "Besides, we might need something. You never know."
"That's true," Abby said. "Well, fix me a plate before you go."
20 minutes later, we were all back at our place. It was something to see the deck in the backyard that way. The way our house sits on the lot, the deck, which was off the kitchen, stood 15 feet in the air. It was on stilts and had a brace to support it, but it mostly stayed put with the help of some very long bolts screwed into the back of the house. Sometime after we left to go to Sam and Jessica's, the bolts decided they were done and eased their way out.
"Someone could have been killed," Sam said when he saw the remains of the deck spewed across the backyard.
"Aside from the fact that after we put the screen porch on the side of the house, no one's been on the deck in years, you're right, son," Daryl agreed. "Someone could have been killed." "Well, the deck is dead, that's for sure. I guess I should feel bad about that. But then I think about spending an entire evening with Abby, and I realize the loss was worth it."
April 24th. Janet texted last night to guilt-trip me about visiting Mom and Dad. She goes out 6 times a year and hates every second of it, but she can't help being a martyr and the world's most dutiful daughter. So she goes. Gary never goes with her because it cost an arm and a leg to fly to Arizona, and since neither of my parents recognize him anymore, he doesn't see the point. I used to go more frequently, but it's so hard because my parents don't recognize me either. Mom's Alzheimer's is at the point where every day is a new day, and not in a good way. She wakes up each morning a lost little girl who's convinced her mother abandoned her at the hospital. Dad's dementia is less dramatic, though I think he's lost the narrative thread as well. He knows who he is and where he is, and he remembers me and Janet, though he's not always sure how he knows us. I'm still angry that we didn't bring them back to Milton Falls when the new memory care center was added on to the Milton Falls retirement community. I'm still mad that Mom and Dad decided to retire in Arizona because they wanted to golf year-round. Now there's a waiting list a mile long to get into Breezeways. I don't think there's much chance that my parents will come home to Milton Falls for their swan song. Should I visit more often? Probably. Will I? I don't know, but I've been stressed out about it all day. Around 4 p.m., Daryl finally suggested I take some handwork out to the porch. Getting outside is good for your insides, he reminded me. Although, strictly speaking, when you're on a porch, you're sort of half and half. But you can smell the honeysuckle and hear the birds sing, which is always good for your head. Don't worry about dinner. I'll pick us something up from Toast. It was good advice. I brought my sewing basket and this, by which I mean this diary, and sat down in my favorite spot, the oversized rocking chair that makes me feel like Edith Ann. We bought it 5 or 6 years ago, and I remember when I mentioned this to Katie, her response was, "Who's Edith Ann?" It was the first time I truly felt old. Daryl was right. The birds and the honeysuckle were soothing. When I was growing up over on Orange Street, we had a screened porch, and Janet and I practically lived there during the summers when we were girls. One year, my dad built us a dollhouse, which for some reason we ignored during the school year, except to decorate it at Christmas. But it was the center of our play from June through Labor Day. We never put actual dolls in it. Our Barbies weren't to scale, and the only dolls we could find that fit were disappointing, little 1960s plastic figurines in dumb poses. The dad frozen in mid-stride, briefcase in hand, the apron-clad mom holding a skillet. Our small imaginary family we structured our dramas and decorating schemes around was so much more satisfying. It all ended, of course, once Janet became a teenager. A teenager. It's what we all dreamed of becoming. Teenagers were cool and mysterious. They used slang that sounded idiotic coming from anyone else. A teacher, for instance, or a 10-year-old little sister. Teenage girls had cool clothes and wore makeup and had long fingernails they painted in brilliant colors. Okay, this will make me sound like an old fuddy-duddy for sure, but when I was growing up, back in the 60s and 70s, parents were serious about not letting kids grow up too fast, especially not girls. In general, you weren't allowed to do anything interesting until you were at least 13. No makeup until you were 13. No nail polish. No platform shoes. You were lucky if your mom let you wear jeans to school. Aside from the restrictions on jeans, I think a lot of those rules made sense. Little girls don't have any business trying to look older than they are. Getting your ears pierced when you turned 13 was practically a rite of passage in my school. When it was your turn, your mom would drive you and your 3 or 4 best friends to the Ashland Mall, where you'd make your way to Rosie's Boutique. I can still feel the weight of that little piercing gun against my earlobe. It was like a starting gun, and as soon as it went off, I was on my way into being a real teen. Oh, the ecstasy of it all. Well, I was ecstatic until I got my first period 3 weeks later and had cramps like you would not believe. Okay, where was I? Oh, yes, Janet in the porch. My sister and I actually got along really well until she started 6th grade and decided I was an annoying baby. What did 3rd graders know anyway? Nothing, according to Janet. She and her friends colonized the porch every summer after that until they went off to college. I can remember the first time I was banned from the porch. Honestly, I don't think I ever recovered. When we bought this house, Daryl was thrilled that it had a screened porch, but I was less enthusiastic, though I wasn't sure why at the time. It took a little digging with Sheila to unearth the old memories. Once we'd pinpointed the summer of my screened porch banishment, Sheila insisted that I get over it. On the first day of spring, she arrived at 5 p.m. with a bottle of wine, a cheese platter, and two beach chairs. It was 49 degrees out, but we wrapped ourselves up in quilts and split the bottle. From then on, the porch has always been my happy place. Sitting out here this afternoon, hand-stitching half-square triangles for no other reason than to stitch. I'll find a use for them later, I'm sure. I wondered if maybe I should invite Janet to visit one weekend. She only lives an hour away, and she hasn't been back to Milton Falls for ages. We haven't been close since 1969, but it's never too late to try again, right? A few years ago, in one of our rare conversations that wasn't all about Mom and or Dad in crisis, she mentioned that she'd like to learn to quilt when she retired from her job at the bank. Well, she retired last fall, so maybe she's ready. It would be so nice to have something to talk about other than our parents. It would be so nice if we could actually be friends. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.